Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
Hello, my name is Wojciech Przybylski and I'm joined by
Albin Sibera.
We're recording this podcast on the 4th of March, 2024. In the weekly outlook of today, you can read more about the economic perils of Hungary with their currency getting on a track of devaluation and decoupling from the other currencies of the region. Countries of Central Europe, unlike Slovakia, have not yet adopted euro. And the interesting things that are happening in the currency, they also translate to the political turbulence. Read more about that in the weekly outlook, along with other regional stories on democratic security. But in this episode, we want to discuss Slovakia. And there are many interesting developments that we should possibly narrate. And I'll have a couple of questions to Albin. But first, let me point out to the two interesting facts that need to be unpacked. On one hand, we had a very fast ruling of the Constitutional Court in Slovakia last week that became immediately the area of political tension. So there are lots of risks actually related to that ruling in Slovak politics for the government specifically, and we'll try to unpack that. And we're also having in parallel on the international scene a meeting between the foreign minister of Slovakia and the foreign minister of Russia. So Albin, which one should we pick first? What's more important from the point of view of democratic security in Slovakia?
Very good question. Let's just stick to your order of things and start with the Constitutional Court ruling, which, as you correctly mentioned, it was described by local media as express ruling. It was interestingly praised by both ruling coalition members as well as the opposition. And I'm saying interestingly because it ruled on what the Slovak ruling coalition calls judicial reform, but what the opposition and the protesters in the streets call as a judicial overhaul. And what's at stake is the changes in the judiciary and a criminal code, which under the proposed so-called reform of the cabinet of the populist leader Robert Fico, would have lowered the penalties for financial and violent crimes significantly, as well as would have lowered the statute of limitations to these. So what the Constitutional Court decision means is that it struck down these controversial paragraphs. However, at the same time, it did not strike down other controversial paragraphs of the so-called reform, most notably the dismantling of the Special Prosecutor Office, which is something that, along with those changes that were struck down, was criticized by the EU. Let's just recall that in January, the European Parliament passed a resolution voicing concern over these. That is why I'm pointing out that, interestingly, we have a decision that was praised by the ruling coalition. Namely, the ruling coalition members were praising the dismantling of the Special Prosecutor Office. Now, here we should point out to our listeners that the Special Prosecutor Office in Slovakia is overseeing high-profile corruption cases in which many of the Robert Fico's ruling party Smer officials are linked or caught up or are facing charges and possible criminal sentences. At the same time, as I said, it was praised by the opposition politicians who praised it as a victory of the rule of law in Slovakia. And finally, we also have comments from Robert Fico, but also comments from the Minister of Interior, who were both voicing doubts about the ruling and whether the court was not under pressure, which is largely seen as their political rhetoric to cast doubt on the ruling. And this is something that the opposition leader Michal Šimečka, chairman of the Progressive Slovakia, was quick to condemn as a very dangerous narrative game. and warned cabinet against not observing the ruling out of fear that it possibly could plunge Slovakia into a judicial chaos in the future or in the upcoming months. So this is the state of the game with the Constitutional Court ruling.
Okay, so let me, before we go to the foreign affairs issue, let me ask you a follow-up question to this. Now, we clearly have seen that while Hungary has been dismantling democracy without interruption for a number of years until the spotlight on Hungary has been brought up mostly because of copying and pasting the same style of autocratic takeover in Poland. And hence, everybody started to study in detail the potential new theme of European or even global politics and how to dismantle democracy has become quite a big theme. Along this line, as time flew, we have seen also a number of resilience preparations and the buildup and the belief that this can actually be stopped and sometimes reversed. To what extent would you say in Slovakia you see the case of civil servants, judicial and civil society being effectively resilient to the process of democracy dismantling or state capture, simply speaking, in parallel to what we have seen previously in Poland and what we are still seeing in Hungary?
I think, as you've correctly pointed out already in your question, the case of Slovakia, I would say, is in some ways it's similar, in some ways it's quite different. One thing it's quite different is that it's happening after the very dismantling of democracy in Hungary that we witnessed in the past years. So when the civil society sees something like this happening in Slovakia, it's obviously very alarmed. And I think this is also why the EU has been quite swift in paying attention to Slovakia. Although some people would point out that with the larger issues, with the war in Ukraine and with the upcoming European Parliament elections in June, the attention is still not sufficient. However, it's quite clear also with the scale of the demonstrations that have been taking place in Slovakia since December, that the moves that Robert Fico's cabinet introduced alarmed not just the opposition and the liberal media, but large swaths of the population, and I think this has partly to do with the experience of seeing Hungary going down the path of dismantling the democracy. At the same time, I think that what we're seeing with Robert Fico is that perhaps his cabinet or his smear party were encouraged by what they saw in Hungary, and then that it's in some way served as a model of how it can be done, and then it's possible to do it. Something that perhaps before the Hungarian experience was unthinkable, even for Fico, who has many journalists would argue was on a populist track in the 2000s and in the 2010s, where he even had a more powerful grip on the country. But he's never went down that path that Viktor Orban and Fidesz did. And many, even you were mentioning euro, it was Robert Fico's cabinet that actually adopted euro currency in Slovakia. And so it begs the question, what's different with Fico now? I mean, one possible answer to this is the change in international relations. That's one thing. We now have a very openly aggressive Russia in east of the border, constantly, as we speak, attacking Ukrainian territory and attacking Ukrainian civilian targets. And at the same time, Russia that is seeking allies inside the EU and is seeking to undermine the EU and the NATO unity. So obvious, the question is, politicians like Fico and his smear party, which has domestic corruption issues facing the party and continuously threatening the very image of the party, are combined with this international situation in which we can only speculate how much of influence is of Russian intelligence behind this meddling with the direction of Slovak politics?
Intelligence aside, there is simply also another very very clear explanation that comes as against mainstream behavior of those who are really under scrutiny, specifically from the legal perspective, under prosecutor eyes or in the prosecutor's investigations. There are politicians around the world that clearly, quickly catch up with the Russian narrative and demonstrate that they are willing to step into the shadow of Moscow in order to take a bit of the bad fame because of simple cut clear corrupt corruption investigations or corrupt case suspicion. They're making it a bigger case to overshadow the very simple nature of their domestic problems. But would that make all of the explanation of the meeting that Slovakia's foreign minister, Mr. Juraj Blanár, has held in Turkey on Saturday? From the Russian point of view, of course, there is something more to gain. It clearly sponsors any messages in the West, in the NATO and EU, that could undermine the unity. So there's a very clear and obvious gain for Moscow to aim for it and to praise Slovak, independent sovereignist approach, because it allows for muscle flexing of Russia, and also it makes look Russia more legitimate on the international front. Is there any benefit from the Slovak perspective of meeting Lavrov in Turkey?
Well, if you look at it in terms of economy, in terms of politics, and from a perspective of a Slovak citizen, it's quite clear that there's little to none benefit. However, as you hinted at previously, there is possibly a benefit for the Smer party, which, as you correctly mentioned, is embattled on its own domestic level in terms of its officials being caught up in the corruption affairs. And what is important to recall is that during the election campaign last year, Smer politicians, as well as other far-right, mostly far-right and extremist politicians in the country, but some more moderate as well, they were quickly to adopt pro-Kremlin link, not just because it would be somehow ideologically close to them, but also because in the past decade, Kremlin has been able to develop what many analysts describe as a disinformation infrastructure in Slovakia, which is comprised of a disinformation website, a complex web of social media profiles and networks. Just to give a few quick examples, during the campaign, during the height of the campaign, in which Smer won fairly narrowly against Progressive Slovakia, deepfake videos were appearing, smearing the leader of Progressive Slovakia, Michal Šimečka. And it's quite clear that Fico and other Smer leaders understood that adopting or attuning to these disinformation narratives does a huge amplifying service for them in terms of that they will basically be able to carry on their campaign without relying on the media. So on this narrative scale, this sort of allegiance towards Kremlin is, to some aspect, perhaps pragmatic and not necessarily ideological. And we could also, I think, take this further and ask ourselves the question: to what extent is it also pragmatic in terms of a party that's deeply rooted in this kleptocratic network, which has already worked in the past? And which clearly has been damaging the party while it was in opposition, and while these investigations into the previous era of Smer in power in Slovakia were taking place. So not just that the Smer leaders adopted the narratives, but they also realized that it's something that can bring them back to power, and it's only from that position of power from which they can protect themselves against the investigations. So I think there is this multi-layered play, and that is worth constantly looking at closer.
Yes, we continue to monitor Slovakia, like many other capitals and countries and the societies of Central Eastern Europe, mostly collected in a regular basis in the weekly outlook, to which I now cordially invite you to read and see what we've prepared for this week. And Slovakia, because of the war in Ukraine, remains this very clear case of a country which it's hard to say it will be decisive, but it is a very important country without which Hungary wouldn't be able to continue its policies related to Russia, which also is a very important country when it comes to the gas and oil transfers to Europe because of the pipeline that goes through Ukraine. At the same time, it's purely speculative for me to say now, but I wonder how much longer Ukrainians would tolerate the transfer of gas and oil through, specifically gas, through their territory into Slovakia and further, since that was the first year that Ukrainians announced they didn't use any of the Russian gas, and the possibility of cutting transfer to Slovakia wouldn't hurt them in a way that it had in the previous years and decades. So these tensions and the sensitivities of the Slovak political economy that comes with it are also huge. And you rightly indicated that the victory of Robert Fico and his power grip, let's say, isn't as strong as in the countries we mentioned previously that went, like Poland, into the democracy, state capture, essentially, not even the democracy backsliding, because that's a term I think we should rightly abandon, or in case of Hungary, where the social support for the policies of the government and for the government themselves is much, much stronger in comparison in the past years. So it's worth observing, because the risks related to the political dynamics in Slovakia, for either way, the pro-Fico and Smer government or the opposition, are still high, and the situation seems to me volatile because of this dynamic. Yeah, I don't know if you agree, Albin, but yeah, feel free to comment. And
Sure. But perhaps I'll start with quickly filling in with one more observation that relates to both the last question and the previous one, and go back to the meeting between the Slovak Foreign Minister Juraj Blanár and with his Russian counterpart Igor Lavrov. I think this is like an example of how Smer is also aware that their position in Slovakia is more volatile than that, for instance, of Fidesz in Hungary. And with meetings like these, what the cabinet ministers are also doing is that they're normalizing this pro-Russian stance for a wider population, because immediately the attention is turned on them. Immediately, the wider public sees that our politician is meeting with his Russian counterpart. So I think Smer is also playing this, maybe what we could term as a longer term game to cement themselves in Slovakia. And again, as I've mentioned previously, it's partly fueled by their own desire to protect themselves against the investigations, to cement not just their politics, but primarily the kleptocratic environment under which they're carrying out the Smer-related business, essentially the mixture of politics and business interests. As you've correctly mentioned, it's to be seen how far they can go with this. Fico already indicated from his previous steps that he's willing to go further, probably, than he was during his previous cabinets, which alone is, in my assessment, quite a worrying sign. However, at the same time, we also saw there are upcoming elections in Slovakia. I'll give you an example, in 3 weeks or 3.5 weeks. Just few months ago, Robert Pellegrini, an ally of Robert Fico, and his former disciple and a former cabinet member, who now leads his own breakaway party from Smer, which is a junior coalition member of Fico's cabinet, center-left Hlas party. So Pellegrini, up until a few weeks ago, he was a clear favorite of the presidential elections. And as we've watched in recent weeks, as the protests against the judicial overhaul were taking place across the cities in Slovakia, what we also saw is that the decisive lead Pellegrini had in the polls began to shrink. And it's many analysts and commentators are attributing it to the political situation. At the same time, we also have to say that Pellegrini still remains in the lead. However, it has what's happening in Slovakia, it has an effect on people, especially people in the large cities are It was clearly seen during the elections. They were voting for the pro-EU liberal parties, whereas it's largely in the countryside where Smer popularity derives from. We can also see that the cabinet is holding various cabinet sessions in the countryside to be closer to the people, to bring the poorer regions to the headlines, so to speak. So in this respect, we see another parallel, I'm guessing, with Hungary. And as you've mentioned, I think in the upcoming weeks and months, we'll be continuing to see more of this battle for the soul of Slovakia, so to speak.
Thank you, Albin. That's been a great roundup on Slovakia. And the political dynamics in this country definitely will keep our eyes on the country, very much also because of the international impact and European impact on what's domestically developing in Slovakia. In this context, we shouldn't forget also that Slovakia, with the current government, is likely to be a player, a stakeholder in forming the next EU Commission. And the game for the next EU Commission will start under the Hungarian presidency in the EU Council. So all of this is really making it even more interesting and quite worrying on one side, but as you said, with the social dynamics clearly set on a divergent path with the hopes of the government to consolidate power. So we remain watching. We are the Slovak and Democratic Security Watchers in this episode. And thank you, Albin, for narrating the political risks and dynamics related to these developments. We encourage you all to read a weekly outlook from this week with many more stories on several other countries from Baltics to Western Balkans, and with special focus, as usual, on Ukraine and global and European perspective on the dynamics that impacts our democratic security in Central Europe. Thank you very much.
Thank you.